This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
From the capital of Texas, you're listening to the Austin Anthem podcast. Today we're going to talk about who's still playing soccer, who might be playing soccer in the near future, and we're also going to choose our Austin FC Mount Rushmores. I'm joined today by Jeremiah Bentley. Jeremiah, how's it going?
Hey, Landon. It's going pretty well, you know, all things considered.
How are you and yours handling the quarantine?
Well, I spent a lot of time locked in the back bedroom. And one of the things I've noticed doing a lot of video calls is our walls are very sparse. And you learn things like that, right? Like, there's people have these, like, beautifully decorated offices and plants and paint and art and stuff like that. And the first call I was on, somebody told me I looked like I was in a prison cell in the Middle East. So I've added some photos. So we're doing a little bit better. How about you?
You have some nice art behind you right now.
Yeah, that was after the fact. That's actually just sitting on a shelf. I just got tired of looking at it.
We're doing all right. We're having to find interesting ways to entertain ourselves. And then also, like, it's my wife and I and our dog in the house. And so we've had to, like, choose to have alone time just because we're both working from home and we're together all day every day, and we kind of just realize, like, oh, we're not used to being around each other this much. So just, like, choosing to, like, okay, you can go do this on your own for an hour, you go walk the dog by yourself this time or something like that. But I've also been trying to do just, like, take advantage of the opportunity. I'd kind of chosen this year as I was going to try to learn as much about MLS as I possibly could this year. And so the other day I watched the 2011 MLS Cup final because I wasn't watching the league back then. I knew who a lot of the players were. But it was LA Galaxy and Houston Dynamo. And so players who I know who they are. Some of them I didn't know who they were. But I think I'm going to try to watch some more of those classic games. MLS is putting those on their YouTube channels. So I'm going to try to watch some of those games. I've also started reading Grant Wall's book, The Masters of Modern Soccer, which is really good. So there's still some good soccer entertainment to be had, even if there's no live soccer going on. So we're hanging in there.
And I have appreciated that it's outlets have had to fish for content. You know, that snow game. I believe that was on ussoccer.com too, right? Which I had not. I mean, I guess I kind of remembered seeing it when it happened live, but it was really interesting to watch again and see the kind of conditions they were in, and caught up on some other documentaries and things that I would not have watched if we were actually had live soccer to watch. So it's an adjustment for sure. More another adjustment that the boys made, because we're all trying to figure out how to play with our friends in this world without actually playing with them, is yesterday afternoon they got their battleship boards and the kids across the street got their battleship boards. And from 20 feet away, they shouted across the street like battleship games at each other. So they're finding ways to connect.
That's pretty creative. Speaking of playing games, I didn't know this, but whenever I was reading over some of the show notes that you had prepared, there are actually a couple of countries that are still playing soccer right now.
Yeah, the most interesting one is Belarus, because Belarus is, one, it's known as Europe's last dictatorship. It's run by a guy named Alexander Lukashenko, and he's one of these, like, Eastern European tough guy. Like, if we just keep drinking vodka and, like, our hearty sort of Eastern Europeanness will get us through all this. And so they are still playing matches, and they're basically, like, the whole country is just up and running as if nothing else is going on, even though everything's been closed down around them, which is crazy.
Yeah, only weak Western capitalists are susceptible to the coronavirus, apparently.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, there's, like, some degenerate gamblers, like, in Las Vegas and around that all of a sudden have become experts on Belarus soccer. I've seen the things people are betting on, and they'll do anything.
Yeah, so Josh Jackson, Austin Anthem member and also once and future podcast co-host, sent us an article about the Nicaraguan League, which is also still playing, and it's also tied to politics somehow. So we'll put a link in the show notes to some articles about those two countries. We don't want to dive too much into politics right now because we have enough of that going on in regular life. So, but we'll put some links in the show notes if y'all want to learn more about that. one league that might be playing again in the future is the Premier League. It's come out that they're talking about maybe doing this TV mega event, is what they're calling. Apparently the UK government is backing this, because what better to have during a crisis than a distraction such as the Premier League? But they'd essentially do like an Olympic Village style setup where all of the players, all of the staffs, everybody would be quarantined off, play closed door matches in who knows where, and just play all of the games like two or three games a week. And just have games every night rolling for a period of time. So what would you think about that, Jeremiah? Is that something you would be into?
Well, okay. That's what do I think about it?
From a fan standpoint, okay, yeah. Let's talk about that first.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a Liverpool fan, right, it was 30 years without a title, and basically this pandemic is the only thing that could steal that away from them. So yeah, the part of me that's really into that wants to get the cup without an asterisk by it loves the fact that they would find a way to complete the season. I mean, I think it would be a very, you know, wild environment to have just players on the field and no sound at all. I didn't watch any. There were a few matches in leagues that still played like without fans. I didn't watch any of those. Like, I can't imagine what a surreal experience, you know, that would be. But from a soccer perspective, I mean, sure, that would be okay. But I hope Liverpool would get the 6 points they need to wrap it up, and then either forfeit every game or play kids or something like that. They're on out. It'd be kind of wild. But I mean, what do you think about that idea?
Yeah. I mean, as a fan, I think you're right. It would be a strange thing to see, but having at that point, they're talking about doing that this summer. And so by that point, we will have gone a few months without any soccer. And so even if it is on a weird pitch out in the middle of nowhere in the Midlands of England, with no fans, no atmosphere going on, I think it would be, we would all love to see just any soccer going on, even if it is weird and doesn't look like we're used to it looking, we would love to see it. That being said, there's a lot of reasons why it might not be the best situation. One of them being that all, like I said before, all those people would have to be quarantined out somewhere in some camps. That's players, which I think players make a lot of sacrifices anyway. They love being on the field and playing games. Most of these guys live for it. And so I think a lot of them would be okay with it. But you start talking about the staffs of the teams, the camera crew, the medical crew, not to mention one of the articles I read today was talking about medical staff who would have to be there are people who could be working in hospitals with COVID-19 patients. And wouldn't be and would be taken away from that. Or if a player gets injured during one of these games, where do they take them to? You can't just take them into the regular hospital at that point. So there almost have to be like a dedicated medical facility for this frivolous thing that they're putting on. And so, yeah, from without thinking too deeply about it, from a fan standpoint, I want to see any soccer, no matter how that happens. But from a bigger picture standpoint, I don't know that it's going to be entirely worth it.
Yeah. And the other thing, I mean, I guess everybody would have to be separated from their families too, right? I don't think you would, when you think about like the multiplying effect of that, I don't think you could have like spouses and kids and staff. I mean, it has to be all the way for everybody. It should be kind of wild, but yeah, to your original point, so many people around the world watch that. It probably would be like the highest possible rated sports event in the world this year if that was all people had to watch.
Yeah, transitioning to MLS, we still haven't had any news come out about what might happen when MLS comes back. I think it's still so up in the air that they just don't really know what that's going to look like. But recently, Adam Snavely on his newsletter, those of you who don't know, Adam Snavely is a freelance writer, wrote regularly for The Athletic, but with the lack of soccer going on right now, he was let go from The Athletic and is not writing professionally as much anymore. So he started a newsletter. Y'all go out and find Adam Snavely's newsletter because he's a great writer. He's really funny for the absurdists out there. I think you guys will really like anybody who likes the serious and the jokes kind of combined together. He's a really great writer for that kind of stuff. But he wrote an article that was titled how a plan to get MLS on the European schedule. So you read it thinking that, oh, he has a master plan. This is how it's going to work. And I don't want to spoil it all, but essentially you read to the end and you realize like, oh, that's actually a terrible idea.
Right. I guess the premise is that this change would allow the league to start back up like late summer, early fall, which would get it on the international schedule. Right. That's the original thought that some people had, but I don't know why this is clear. A lot of it just comes down to weather, right? And just
that's the biggest thing. Yeah. That's, I mean, there are various other smaller reasons, but the biggest one is weather. There's 6 to 9 cities who would have a really difficult time playing between the months of October and March. Minnesota would be terrible. You wouldn't be able to play games for a huge chunk of the year. Chicago would be in that boat. New York would be in that boat. And then a lot of the Midwestern cities as well would maybe not as wide of a window in the calendar, but still the winter is just not hospitable to those types of events outdoors. So I think, yeah, Adam mentions this in his article that we could just do what the Scandinavian leagues do, stretch out the league a little bit, time it out a little bit better so that we're not playing through international breaks or FIFA windows or things like that, and just make the season work that way, because it's honestly fine. It's not a big deal that we're not on the European schedule.
Yeah. And how does that uniquely an American problem? Is it just the fact that we're so far north to south? I mean, I guess other leagues, it's either cold, like in the entire country and the entire league at once, or hot at once. But
well, the Scandinavian countries play on essentially the MLS schedule. They play a summer schedule. And so
it takes a longer break. Gotcha.
Yeah. So I think I'm not sure what all countries do it. I don't, like Denmark, for example, I don't know if they're on a summer schedule or a winter schedule, but I know like Norway and Sweden and Finland, they all run on a summer schedule just because you'd either have to play indoors or just not play during the winter. And so, I think Adam's suggestion in the article is dead on. Just space it out a little bit better, not play during FIFA windows. We can still do the summer schedule and it not be a hindrance to some of these things. So, yeah, that's my take on it. But let's
talk part of it, guys. Like, when is there ever a good time to play in Denver? I feel like every time there's an example of this window is going to be snowing in Denver. I guess they have that problem in Colorado right now, even at the start of the end of the existing season, I think, you know, where they end up getting weather that's, even in the summer schedule, it's not acceptable really to play. It kind of messes with things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like that's the springtime would be completely unpredictable because you schedule to play on the road through this stretch of time, and then, oh, a March snowstorm hits. And what do you do at that point? So yeah, I don't know that it would ever work. Let's jump to this Phil West article that was released on MLSsoccer.com. He wrote the definitive cult heroes of every team. So what did he actually, do you remember what his definitions of a cult hero is?
I don't. And so I think we're just going to make up what we think his definition was. I think that would be the best for us.
It's essentially like not the best player on a team, but, and also not necessarily the most popular, but just someone that for some inexplicable reason has endeared himself to the fans.
Yeah, I think the perspective on it that was helpful to that is he did talk to, I think on every club he was talking to somebody from the actual supporters group, you know, so it was the player that connected the most with him. And, you know, I recognized almost none of the names.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, for guys like us who haven't been following the league for a super long time, a lot of these people are going to be from a bit further back. So like, a guy who I really love who was on this list is Latif Blessing. I think he's so much fun to watch and he works super hard every time he's on the field. So talking about people who might be like cult heroes at any club, I would love to have a guy for Austin FC like Latif Blessing, who just looks like he's having so much fun on the field, always has a big smile on his face and works super hard no matter what Bob Bradley has told him to do that game, he's going to go out and give his all every time. So other guys like Michael Parkhurst are just like that was the pick for Atlanta United. Just a consummate professional. He's been in the league for a long time and just one of those guys who's just seems like he probably holds that locker room together in a way that is worth way more than anything he does on the field would ever be. And so thinking about the qualities that make someone a cult hero, what do you think that would look like in Austin? Are there any specific qualities that you think would make someone more popular with the fans in a city like Austin?
I think it comes down to somebody that's, you know, it's gotta be somebody that's hardworking, you know, somebody that, like you said, it looks like they're having fun, you know, somebody that I would imagine the first person that comes down to the supporters end to sing or chant or show love or whatever will probably be, get them a long way toward being a cult hero. But I think somebody just really enjoys the game and maybe gets more out of themselves than their raw talent would provide. I mean, those are the characteristics that I would look for somebody that would be a cult hero for me.
Yeah. Maybe someone who is like also a musician or just like someone who just seems like a really chill person. So Tommy McNamara was someone else who was on the list in Phil's article, and he's just like really like relaxed guy and like never does anything kind of like halfway. It's like all or nothing. And he doesn't score. He's like never scored a simple goal in his life. If he's going to score, it's a 30-yard banger and then he'll go 15 games without scoring another one. But maybe someone who's just like a chill person that kind of fits the Austin vibe, or someone who's like a musician or something. And so that has like this Austin-esque characteristic that doesn't necessarily mean anything on the field, but endears them to the fans for these other weird reasons. But that kind of transitions into this next thing we wanted to talk about, which is an idea that we admittedly stole from Extra Time. The Extra Time podcast, they've been doing Mount Rushmore for every MLS team. So they're kind of slowly working their way through the league and doing two or three every episode. So examples of what this looks like is, so Toronto FC's Mount Rushmore is Michael Bradley, Sebastian Giovinco, Jozy Altidore, and Jonathan Osorio. So they're only choosing players, and they're choosing the four best, most influential, most important, whatever adjective you want to throw into it for each of these teams. So I started thinking that would be a really fun thing to do for Austin, even though we don't have any players yet. There are still a lot of people who have been very influential and very important in this whole process. And so I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about that. So Jeremiah has prepared his Mount Rushmore and I have prepared mine. We have not shared these with each other. And so we're going to compare those on the show right now and see how many we got the same. I'm guessing at least two of them are going to be the same. So are your one and two Claudio Reyna and Josh Wolf?
Why, Landon, they sure are. What a surprise there. Yeah. Those are the easy ones.
The easy ones. So those are the two guys who, whatever the team actually looks like the first couple of years on the field, those are going to be the two who have the most influence on that. For better or for worse, those are going to be the guys who decide what we look like on the field and to a larger extent if we're good or not and if we have success those first couple of seasons. The rest of the picks aren't going to be that. So who is your number three, Jeremiah?
So my number three, I had like seven number threes and fours depending on how this went, but I'm going to stick to the list that I actually wrote down. So my number three was Steve Adler.
I also chose Steve Adler for number three.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this thing would not have happened for sure without his persistence and his influence and his,
why is that, Jeremiah? For people who don't know the whole story, why is Mayor Adler so influential on this process?
So Mayor Adler, first of all, he was the first person that was contacted by MLS, about it. And then if you remember, it was not exactly 100% deal that everybody was going to be supportive of it. And there was a lot of negative feedback from the various communities in particular areas, but in a way that I have not seen him do on a ton of issues. Like, he really held firm and was really committed to making the deal happen. And really, I think, did a good job of both pushing the club to make concessions that benefited Austin, as well as really keeping a sort of a tenuous majority, seven council members together, to make sure that things happen on the Austin side. So it was things like Greg Kaskar really cared about affordable housing, and so he made sure that some commitment to affordable housing was in the deal. Delia Garza and some of the members that voted against it really cared a lot about making sure that that like girls and women were included. So he made sure that some of those deals were put together. So the way that he was able to put something together that reflected all of the values of Austin, and in a way that really benefited all of us, was really critical.
Yeah, doing all that while still keeping it on the rails and actually getting it pushed through. So that was no small feat, and was not guaranteed that that was ever going to be the outcome. So for number four, I think there's two ways you can go on this. So if we're going pure popularity contest, I think there's one clear choice. And if we're going the direction of who actually did the dirty work or who actually made decisions that made this happen, there's a few other choices you could go with. So is Matthew McConaughey, if we're going popularity contest, is Matthew McConaughey on your list, or did you go the other direction?
I went the other direction. Well, I tried to make my fourth one like not like a little bit out of people that we could really think of. So no, McConaughey was on the list, and I felt like I had to exclude like Precourt, and even Andy really too, just because those were too obvious. So my fourth would have been whichever butler had the most influence over the creation of the logo. And I don't know which one that one was.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Marty does more of the actual visual design. I mean, Adam is involved in it as well, but I think they kind of do different sides of it. From what I understand, Marty does more of the actual visual design of it all.
Okay, so I'm carving Marty in stone on the mountain.
All right.
I feel like just that branding, when that came out and it became something other than this mythical thing to be, that was a city council negotiated thing into a, you know, a logo and a brand and an icon that we could rally around and get on shirts and put on merch. Like, I think that was a really important step into Austin FC becoming a reality. So Marty Butler is my number four on my Mount Rushmore.
We can put them both on there. We'll just do a Butler Brothers is number four. The entity of Butler Brothers is number four. I kind of wish I would have put Butler Brothers on there now, but I went a different direction and had a really hard time choosing between two people for my fourth pick. Those two people were Richard Suttle and Don Garber. And so, So Don Garber, I think, the more you read about kind of the years and all of the work leading up to the Grant Wall tweet in 2017, the more it seems like the league was definitely involved in some of this stuff and definitely okay with all of this happening. And so I think Don Garber definitely, if not him specifically, then MLS in general had a big hand in it. But Richard Suttle was another one who had a lot of kind of the, like I said before, the dirty work that needed to be doing. So can you tell the uninformed listeners who Richard Suttle is and why he was important to this process?
Yeah, so Richard Suttle's a lawyer at Armbrist & Brown, but most importantly, he's the lobbyist at City Hall. So if you're a developer or a company or anybody that wants to do anything in Austin, you hire Richard Suttle and your thing comes to be. And I think this is probably one of the more challenging ones that he's ever done. But I mean, he put the team together to really work the City Hall side of things, and work with council and work with all the community groups to get them all together. It was really sort of the main strategist for what it took in order to make the club happen. And as we all know, he drives a giant pickup truck and he has two daughters because he mentioned that more than once at council. And one of my favorite moments ever was him like double parking his truck in front of Haymaker in the parking lot and walking in like half a dozen people the night of the vote when we celebrated.
Yeah. So I think so. He was actually employed by Major League Soccer to begin with during this whole thing, representing MLS in the city of Austin. And so where the relationship with Mayor Adler, I think, was very important on the surface of the public process that needed to be doing. The relationship with Richard Suttle was the one that was happening kind of behind the scenes. This is who you talk to get this done. This is what you do to get this done. He's a person who knows all of that in this city. And so, yeah, for better or for worse, you may not agree with everything Richard Suttle does, but I think he was a huge player in this thing. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, he was. And so I have one more honorable mention then, because Suttle was on my others receiving votes list, and Jimmy Flanagan was also, would have been the other one. And especially because of the love that he's shown to us over time. And I still have a dream of him playing some kind of brass instrument in this, in the stands with Amorga. So maybe that will earn him a spot on the wall too.
Yeah. Jimmy was a city council member during all of this. He's been on our show before. He's a lovely, lovely human and someone who I think really wants the best for this city and has been a strong supporter of this whole movement. So I would be completely happy to see Jimmy's face on our Mount Rushmore.
I've got one other thing. Did you actually study Mount Rushmore itself? So this is what I did yesterday.
No, but so Extra Time actually did a segment before we steal all of their bits.
Okay.
They actually talked about the history of a little bit, and Andrew Wiebe, the main host on Extra Time, is kind of a history nerd. And so he went into it and he was like, I understand that Mount Rushmore is entirely problematic. So we are not necessarily condoning everything to do with Mount Rushmore, but it's just the best model for what we're doing right now. Essentially, stolen land from Indians, that whole story. So giving Native Americans a plot of land, realizing there's a valuable resource on it, and then stealing it back from them. So not great, not a good look. Maybe we'll come up with some other model to do this in, just a top four most influential instead of calling it Mount Rushmore. But that's the model we have right now. So that's what we went with.
That'll work. Because I was just like, if you think about four presidents' heads being carved in the side of a mountain in the middle of nowhere, like, it's a bizarre thought.
All right.
And then
so
you read the story, you understand why.
So we're talking about this Mount Rushmore of players, like what Extra Time was doing for the rest of the league. Did you see this thing on Twitter, Jeremiah, where people were saying, like, retweet and post four players who were very important to you in your life? Did you see that on Twitter?
Yeah, I did. It was neat. And then it was cool because it was social, because you were also supposed to tag like three or four other people to get them to name theirs too. And I would love to see sort of the collected responses. Yeah. Among everyone in Austin to see who kept coming up over and over and over again.
So who were your people?
So number one, I was Steven Gerrard. Kind of the main reason I fell in love with Liverpool was watching him play and seeing him dominate and be the steady force on the club for so long. And it was nice because I always felt comfortable buying his jersey because you knew he was going to be on the team the next year.
Yeah, and he like probably wasn't going to do anything terrible.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's him. Clint Dempsey definitely was my very favorite U.S. national team player just for his style of play.
Dempsey was on mine as well.
My third one was Bobby Firmino because I feel like he's underappreciated.
Oh, yeah.
He's been great and does whatever's asked of him. If he scores, if he needs to score, he assists if he needs to assist. He tracks back if he needs to. You know, and he's not a huge name. For them. And I think my fourth was Fernando Torres.
Okay.
Just because how dominant he was early on at Liverpool. So yeah. Who were your other ones?
So yeah, I had trouble narrowing it down. So my first love in soccer was FC Barcelona. It was the 2009-2010 team. I did a semester in Spain and had never really watched soccer before that point. When I got there, I was like, I'm going to learn about this because it's part of the culture. So even if I don't like it, I'll go back home and watch American football or basketball. I'm going to get into this because it's a big part of the culture here. And that team just happened to be an extremely likable team, a really fun to watch team. And so honestly, I could fill all four with guys on those Barca that squads team. From those few years. So Xavi, Iniesta, my tactical acumen wasn't high enough to really appreciate Busquets that year. But a few years later, I really got into watching Busquets play and how he controls a game with what he does. David Villa. But so I ended up putting, I don't even remember who I put on there now. I think I put Andres Iniesta. Iniesta was kind of like Gerard, like, you knew he wasn't going to go anywhere anytime soon. You knew there wasn't going to be like any scandal or anything. You're not going to be able to wear his jersey out in public anymore. So I really liked watching Iniesta play. Number two was Clint Dempsey, just unapologetically American. Then I also put on there. Oh, so yeah, the other one actually was a Barca player. So Carlos Puyol, he was the captain of those teams most of the time. Big floppy hair. He's kind of a short center back, but just had a lot of fight to the way he played and was just a lot of fun to watch. And then the last one on my list, just because of the MLS connection, I think, is Miguel Almiron. So that season, those two seasons that he was at Atlanta United were the first seasons that I was really properly paying attention to Major League Soccer. And he was... they were so much fun to watch. I ended up watching Atlanta a lot, and Miguel Almiron was just a firecracker. He's just always so much fun to watch. And so, I have him to thank for a lot of my knowledge about the league, just because I didn't mind turning on every week because that was something I knew I could get into every time that I turned the TV on. So, yeah, I have a lot of love for Miggy.
Yeah. So in that Atlanta club was the 24 story of the 25 stories that made MLS, the Ramen Brothers finally just wrapped that series up, and that was really good piece. And you understand the investment that they made in the club, and you heard the story of Darren Eales. And if you really ever want to hear the story of Darren Eales, like, the Men in Blazers did a couple of pieces with him on how he built the team that were really interesting. And they interviewed him and really dug into it. But the 25th story that made MLS was the Save the Crew episode. So if you had the chance to listen to that one, that's, I think it just came out a few days ago, maybe while you're either right before you went out of town or just after. But have you checked it out?
Yeah, I did. I listened to it yesterday. I thought it was well done. And they actually referenced us at one point, not by name, but they said that we talked to those. We did an interview with the guys from the supporters group in Austin.
Yeah, I appreciated that. Yeah, you went in like hoping to hear something about us. But
my best friend Landon told me this.
Exactly. I mean, I think it was well done. It was a perspective you get if you think about some people who weren't in the middle of the great Twitter wars of 2017 and 2018, you know, out of Atlanta that are in New Jersey, really, right? They're just MLS fans that were observing it from afar. I think it got oversold a little bit as far as, you know, I mean, ultimately what the effect was, because it took a attorney general lawsuit and a really rich guy to ultimately resolve that. But yeah, it was a pretty feel good story, and it was.
Yeah,
I think as an Austin fan, I think it's really good to understand that that's going to be the perspective that a lot of people that didn't spend hours and hours and hours or why to dig into all this. That's probably like the superficial version of it. It makes a complete sense.
And yeah, and I was thinking about that a lot too. That it's sitting in Austin and having lived through all of that, looking at it all under a microscope, I think it's hard for us to see that part of the story the same way a lot of people do, just because there were eight other stories happening at the same time that we all view as the same one. When really the story that the Ramens told in their podcast, that story is true. That part of the story is true. It's just not the same story that we lived. And so on the surface, it is really great, like a spectacular feat that you're right that it didn't included a lawsuit and a billionaire and whoever else, but that's the way professional sports work. Like, but the beginning of that movement did start with those people and their organization and kind of the fight that they had, which deserves like commendation. Like I think it does. And it like I said, it's hard for us in Austin to look at it that way all the time, because there are a bunch of other moving parts of it. And it felt like a war, like, was being waged on us a lot of the times. And even though we weren't really involved with any of the stuff going on, we felt like we were being attacked all the time just because of where we live and the fact that we were going to benefit from all of this. And so, I think as an Austin fan and an Austin resident, you have to separate those things, and you can look at that part of the story and say, yeah, that's kind of a beautiful thing that happened. But also realize like there's 8 other stories that are very interesting and just as important as what happened that aren't going to get told just because they're not as interesting to tell from someone who wasn't involved in it. But yeah, I thought it was a well done thing and fit the model of the show that they were doing.
Yeah, it did. And I mean, there's no doubt that they had to create enough of an uproar to get other people outside of that group to care. Right. I mean, the lawsuit from the lieutenant governor, whatever, Ohio, doesn't happen if they don't have 2,000 people show up right at that rally. I mean, they did manage to do outside of that. And if you're a fan of Dallas or Colorado or, you know, some of these other clubs that have been around for a long time, you know, maybe even without as much history and don't have a lot of great financial results, I mean, like, why wouldn't you pull for like something like that to succeed? Because otherwise you're thinking, you know, are we going to be next? And so, of course, you're going to pull for that. For the Save the Crew movement to pull it off.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with some Austin Anthem news and updates. A lot of us are looking for ways to help people in these times, but may not know where to go. United Way for Greater Austin and Austin Community Foundation have partnered to create All Together ATX, a community-led philanthropic fund which will provide money to nonprofit organizations working with communities disproportionately impacted by COVID-19. 100% of the money will stay local and 100% will go to those who need it most. Austin Community Foundation and United Way will take no money for the administration of the All Together ATX Fund. If you'd like to make a donation, visit alltogetheratx.com. And if you're in need of support because of the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic or for any other reason, please reach out to 211. It's a community program run by United Way that can connect you with nonprofits and others who can help you through the challenging times that you're facing.
So we wanted to close the show out with talking about some things that are going with Austin Anthem. And one of the campaigns that we put together to try to help also during this time is one that we're calling Together Austin or Aguante Austin in Spanish. And the idea is that if any of our members purchase beer now to go only from any of the places that we've had an event at or any of our partner bars or breweries or make a donation to any of the nonprofits that are doing work in the community, specifically with populations that are affected the most by this pandemic, that we will send them an exclusive holographic, super cool, limited edition Grackle sticker. And you can do that by purchasing your item, posting on social about it, and then using either the Aguante Austin or Together Austin hashtags on it. So I ran around a couple weeks ago and picked up a whole bunch of beer from a whole bunch of different breweries, which I was probably going to do anyhow. In order to sort of help support that campaign. And I got to try some pretty good stuff. You've been pleasantly enjoying any of the things that you picked up, Landon?
Oh yeah. We went to, St. Elmo cause they're one of the few of the places that we've partnered with here on the south side of town. So I got a few things from St. Elmo and then, have actually gone up to Hop Squad twice since, cause they're nice. the day that they kind of increased restrictions, we were afraid that the breweries were going to have to shut down. We found out later that day that that's not the case and they are still open. If they want to be, they're allowed to stay open. So, but yeah, I've gotten a couple of things from Hop Squad. This is just kind of a way for us to try to take care of the people who have taken care of us over the last couple of years. A lot of these places are going to have a hard time making it through this, especially if it lasts for a long time. So anything we can do to kind of help them, persist through this thing, we want to try to do that. So any way you can help, whether it's one of these bars or breweries or one of the nonprofits in town that are helping people, if you're able to, and if you're lucky enough to still be in a good position, please help out one of these places. Another thing we wanted to mention is a video that ZMC, the Austin Anthem band, put together. So Mateo, who is one of our band leaders, kind of spearheaded this project, but It's a song called Matador that's pretty popular amongst Mexican and Argentinian murgas. And so some of the guys in the band adapted these lyrics, and the main part of it is Señores, yo soy de Austin y tengo aguante. And so aguante that we've used in our social media, our social media campaign, it kind of has a bigger meaning than what I could translate it to in English, but it's like the ability to persist, the ability to kind of fight through something. And so to say that you have aguante, it's like, we're going to make it through this. Like, we're strong enough to get through this. And so that was a really cool, just a cool message to put into this song. But since we had to cancel all the events that the band was going to be playing at, we're not allowed to rehearse anymore. Mateo and Rigo and maybe some of the other guys kind of had this idea of putting together a way that we could play music while not in the same place. And so the way we did it is had Faris play the bombo, just kind of lay down a tempo, and then Mateo played the trumpet line over the top of that. And then we just kept sending it to each other and adding chanting and different instruments onto the top of it until we had the full song all together. And so it was a really fun way to show that we're not going to let this get us down. We're still going to play music together. We're still able to do things, to be together, even if we're not together, and kind of get creative and find ways to fight through this and kind of come out stronger on the other side. So that was a really cool project. You guys should look that up. It'll be all over all of the Anthem and Zanate Musical Collective social media accounts, but it was a really fun project.
And it features a giant inflatable unicorn, which I love. I mean, and I would like to see more of. So I guess Cassie and Veronica they're just like wonderful people and happy spirits. And we had a little video happy hour talk with them. And I think they've been like in the unicorn suit, like going to places and like just telling people to smile and cheer up and stuff. So I can't wait to get back together with them in person. But it was a neat guest appearance to come in at the end of that. I know there's some other ways that we're trying to virtually connect with everybody during this time. They had a big Tony and James organized a big FIFA tournament through the Discord channel. And I know they're trying to do more of that. I saw that the EMLS is going on and EMLS friendlies are going on. Hector, the official Austin FC guy, I think played maybe day before yesterday against somebody from Minnesota United. And then we're looking at every other thing that we can do option-wise to help us all stay together in this time when we're apart. So I think an idea that we'll most likely do is maybe like a Facebook Live video Q&A, you know, maybe some Zoom chats and things like that to just really kind of keep us all together and keep us moving forward to 2021.
If you guys have any ideas for things you would like to see happen during this break, we're going to have time to kind of play with some stuff. So get in touch and maybe we can try it out.
Yeah, for sure. We would love all of your ideas as we try to fill these gaps and try to move on. If you haven't gotten your membership for this year, now's a perfect time to sign up and do that. And then we got a bunch of new merch that we were planning on rolling out to the South by Southwest party, and that didn't happen, but the merch is all still there. So there's summer scarves, which we will need, polo shirts, there's patches, there's a lot more that's out there and available. So please go out and pick some of that up from the store.
We also want you to check out the Grackle's Nest Facebook group and the Austin FC subreddit to get into the conversation with other Austin FC fans. So we'd also like to remind you to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcasting app. So that's the end of the show. We'll be back soon with more Austin FC news. My name is Landon Cottom.
My name is Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.